Hey guys, welcome back to Community Talks, our one and only community podcast. This is Kim, your hostess with the mostest, and today we are talking about National Apprenticeship Week. I'm here again with my compadre, Victor. Hey, Victor.
Yeah, Kim, I'm here. I'm so excited to be here, and this was a promise that we made, and we're doing it. We had to have another one, and here today, we're having it.
And another one. And with another one, what we're talking about is we are here once again with Joshua Johnson. He is also the director of JFF. We also talking about diversity, equity, inclusion, and technical assistance for the Center of Excellence. So with him, we are once again continuing with our debate or our discussion or our education, whichever way you want to use it, equity versus equality. You have to know the difference, because we have found out that a lot of people do not know the difference. However, equity fits a lot of categories and a lot of genres and a lot of places and a lot of people, and we need to talk about all of them.
And this is very important to our communities, and we all need to have like the same understanding in order to build a better future for ourselves, for our children, and for generations to come. And we have Mr. Joshua Johnson over here to kind of also help us understand, educate us, and give us more information about this wonderful work they've been doing, right?
And I'm excited as a mother of a black male in this society.
Right.
I need people to understand the fears.
Right.
The things I wake up to.
Yeah.
The prayers that I pray.
Yeah.
The GPS tracking device I have on my son, not because I don't trust him, only because I'm not sure who he's around.
Exactly.
So you have to understand the mindset of a parent of a young black male.
Exactly.
So I don't want to take up a lot of time. I want to hear from Mr. Johnson. We'll talk about the National Apprenticeship Week, which takes place November 15th through the 21st, actually starting today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about the nationwide exposure that we have. And I want to give it to you because you have a lot of background with what your apprenticeship is, the meaning of it, your mission and goals, and then exactly what is it doing to the population that you target.
Welcome back, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you. Thank you. And you just gave me like, that's like 3 years worth of podcasts we can do just in those questions that you asked alone. We're going to try and do it.
I'm here for it.
We're going to try and do this in 30 to 60 minutes. You know, but we might carry it on again like last time.
We can.
Thank you all for having me back. It's truly a pleasure and honor to come on back and to be able to share again. I know in the last one we kind of talked, we scratched the surface about who I was, what I was doing. You know, I was just moving into the role that I'm in now, and now I'm, you know, a month under my belt. Now I'm a little more grounded and can really start to take that conversation a little bit farther to tie it into what we're doing. So it's great that you were able to bring me back in, and you know, definitely happy National Apprenticeship Week for those of us around the country who love apprenticeship. This is, at least here in Wisconsin, I always used to say, this is my Christmas. You know, as we get older, we don't get gifts, right? We get like socks. We might get a, you know, some shoelaces or something from the kids. Ain't no telling. So this was like my Christmas because I was able to go around and really celebrate the things we were doing in apprenticeship. And now I'm really excited to be able to have that national conversation to talk about apprenticeship. And I appreciate you all giving me the platform here as well to have that conversation. So, you know, as you said, Joshua Johnson, I'm a director within JFF Jobs for the Future. I am in the Center for Apprenticeship and Work-Based Learning, and as part of that responsibility, I'm the director for the Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, and Accessibility Center of Excellence. Right. And that project, you know, we're really talking about that project a lot this week as we're really getting the word out about what we're doing. That project really is to help support diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility into apprenticeship. We've seen some of the national numbers, and they're very disparaging. You know, some of the most recent numbers, we see 91% of apprentices across the country are male, 9% are women. And then if we want to start breaking it down, and if I start breaking it down too far, the numbers will just be, you'll start to see why there's a need for the DEIA Center in apprenticeship. When we start to look at you know, the makeup of the men and women, we then start to see that 58.8% are white. And being that men dominate 91% of that pie, we're going to safely assume that many of the folks who have checked off white are men. So we really have a lot of work to do. We have a lot of work cut out for us. I will say the numbers have gone up. It was 7.3% women just a couple years ago, so we're creeping up.
Right.
Okay. And that might not seem like a lot, but if you know when you're talking about a national scope, that does mean that we're getting some exposure out.
Right.
And individuals, I will say employers, are starting to see the value, obviously, and that's what we really want to. We really want to push that conversation. So I ended up coming to JFF, as I said, about a month ago. I was the former state director of apprenticeship here in Wisconsin. And I'm very fortunate to join a talented team and a talented organization that's been around for 35 years. Okay. And it's been pushing economic advancement, you know, supporting the worker, getting supports out there for those employers. Right. As they continue to grow their workforce, we're run by a fantastic CEO. Her name is Maria Flynn. Mm-hmm. She's a fantastic leader. Really gives us the opportunity to be us. Mm-hmm. I think that's maybe the best way to put it is to tap into our expertise to get the word out about JFF, but also our expertise in who we are and the work that we're doing. Mm-hmm. So it was really exciting to become a part of their organization. Great team, great staff. We're all across the country. So our home office is, we have our home office in Boston. Mm. Then we have office in D.C. and Oakland. Okay. And then so me and my team, we're all remote. So I'm here. My associate director is in Philly. And then my senior program manager is in Iowa. Wow. So we have the only thing we're missing is somebody on the West Coast.
Right.
Just on my, you know, on our team with the DEIA Center. But we're really excited. We have 9 partners who've signed on with this cooperative agreement with USDOL. Department of Labor, to help us further this conversation. I mean, we have, you know, when I share these, you know, when I think about just a handful of the folks, right, we have 110, which is a group of CEOs, black CEOs,
wow.
Right? So we're going to be talking to them about how to create apprenticeship opportunities at the businesses that are partnered with them. Unidos US, right? Tapping into their network of employers, stakeholders, and start to have a conversation about apprenticeship. All the way down to the center, the Rutgers Center for Serving Minority Serving Institutions, the HBCUs, the tribal colleges. How do we get the conversation out to individuals who have been disenfranchised in the apprenticeship conversation, right? They've not been involved, nor has, you know, when we think about employers or when we think about any organizations really thinking, well, how can we connect HBCUs to apprenticeship, right? And then down to the UMass Boston Center, the Center for Inclusion, right? Yeah. Dealing with individuals with disabilities and having that conversation to find out and put an equity lens on all the work that we need to get done and, you know, the whether it's resources or tools or whatever. So it's a really exciting time. I use the word exciting a lot because it's very exciting the times we're in. We see a workforce that is really struggling right now, and we're talking employer as well as the worker, and we're just trying to fill that gap and try to make sure that we're standing there to expose individuals to what apprenticeship looks like, and to make those access points visible when they've been hidden or non-existent for our communities, for underserved communities, for as long as apprenticeship has been around.
Well, that's good, because I want you to tell us to the basic. What is apprenticeship?
That's a great question. So another, that's like a 3-year. We could do a 3-year podcast on apprenticeship.
I think you just want to be a permanent guest. Let's go.
So apprenticeship, there's basic tenets to apprenticeship, right? It's a high quality training program. It has rigor, standards, and the quality, right? The basic tenets of apprenticeship, it has to be 1 year in length, right? So that means that the apprenticeship program has to be a minimum of 1 year. There has to be 144 hours of related instruction or schooling tied to each year of that apprenticeship. And then the last one is real easy. It's a occupation that is routinely learned on the job. So those are the basics. Mm-hmm. You can get a little more detailed depending on the occupation. They may require, you know, licensing. They may require types of testing. Right. But those are the real 3 basic tenets. And what it is, it gives an employer the opportunity to train their incumbent or new workers into their workforce and train them under their process, right? It gives them this outline that is supported from state committees here in Wisconsin. So I can speak very deeply about Wisconsin. The state trade committees, they create standards of apprenticeship for each occupation. And those employers adopt those standards in. And when they adopt those standards in for apprenticeship, or when they adopt the bare minimum standard of the program, it's called an Exhibit A. It's the training outline. Mm-hmm. The employer now has an outline of exactly how they will train every apprentice that they bring on. So there's a benefit to that, right? Number one, for the employer, there's an outline that says this is what we're going to do. For the employee, they know this is exactly what I'm going to learn.
Okay.
Also part of an apprenticeship is a progressive wage scale. What that means is all throughout the apprenticeship, you know how much money you're going to make. And you have to progress at certain increments throughout the apprenticeship. Your wage has to average 60% of the skilled wage rate that's created by the employer and by here in Wisconsin, the Department of Workforce Development. And your wage averages that 60% throughout the, it can't be any lower than 60% throughout your apprenticeship. Yeah. So when we think about apprenticeship, it really is a way to get individuals in and to get them hands-on experience, teaching them for an employer the way that they do the work. And, you know, I heard it earlier when I was on an event earlier, there is no such thing as an apprenticeship without a job. So that's really the big key about apprenticeship is you're hired. Apprenticeship is not internship. You're not hoping to work here. You're not hoping after this apprenticeship that you still have a job. Right. No. You start day one. You are an employee of that employer as an apprentice. So there's great benefit to employers starting those apprenticeships to get individuals in and really start to upskill them very quickly. And as I said, the state trade committees are helping to create that bare minimum. It really gives an opportunity for individuals to move up pretty fast. I always say, you know, I can't think of any other workforce program in existence where when you start an apprenticeship, you typically just maybe have been exposed to what it is, but you don't have a lot of skill. But when you're done with the apprenticeship, you're considered a skilled worker in that occupation.
Wow.
To me, there's no other workforce tool or solution where that happens.
Right.
More importantly, on the employer side, you know, when I tell you these numbers, you know, if you were a business, you'd be all in. For every dollar that an employer invests into an apprenticeship program, they get $1.47 back. Those are national numbers. You know, that's the ROI. So when you're talking about apprenticeship, there's huge value for an employer.
It is.
But there's even bigger value for a person.
Right.
And that's where my work comes in now, because those persons have not been persons that look like me, you, or you.
Exactly.
And that's where we have to take the next step with the work that we're doing, is to make sure that we're ensuring opportunities and ensuring that visibility to apprenticeship for our communities.
So tell us one thing. How would your apprenticeship promote the diversity, equity, and inclusion? And that would just not only include just race, but gender, sexual orientation, ability, whatever it is, whatever capacity that is needed, how would apprenticeship help with those areas?
So, you know, it's actually kind of almost the reverse, right? It's how can we help those underserved communities create a pathway to the middle class, right? How can we do that? And that's what apprenticeship does. So for those underserved communities, apprenticeship can be one of the vessels to get them to family sustaining wages, to get them educated more, right? There's some apprenticeships across the country that have associate degree, tech diploma, and some of them bachelor's degree that are tied to the apprenticeship program. And even at HBCU, they have a master's degree program that's tied to it. So it's creating that pathway to the middle class for everyday citizens who are just looking to continue to grow, whether it's professionally, through their education, or continue to grow within a company, right? Many times people come in, and many employers here in the state of Wisconsin, they have a lot of great diversity in their frontline or entry-level workers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But as you kind of grow the ladder, you'll start to see no inclusivity, right? And that's a conversation we want to have is you actually have the workers in your building already. How can we help you create inclusive apprenticeship programs, which then will allow those frontline, entry-level, diverse folks to move into the high-skilled occupations that you're training in? So you think about it, it is, you know, when you talk about underserved communities, the goal here is to educate the underserved communities about the existence of apprenticeship, but then also for us to get the employers to fully understand how important it is for them to compete locally, nationally, and even globally by creating inclusive apprenticeship programs.
So, you know, I like to play devil's advocate. So part of the Kim is coming out. You know, that was a nice Kim. But so you're trying to explain to me, because I listen for understanding, that there is this awesome program that is designed to promote opportunities for the disenfranchised and poverty-stricken areas, hardworking people who cannot get past their entry-level position or wages to move to the middle class, but this is not spoken of. How is it that we don't have employers that are moving towards this opportunity? Because it seems like, to me, I hear a lot of other opportunities for a lot of other people, but I don't hear a lot about the disenfranchised. So when we talk about the disenfranchised, we're talking about those who have had to live on the system, those who may have disabilities, medical, mental, whatever it takes, or whatever it may be, those who have come out of the prison system, those who are coming from me, widows, raising four children. So when we have those life circumstances that you really have, which you end up having some people working two or three jobs, but they cannot make ends meet. But you're telling me there exists this program on a national level, and we do not have national exposure as much as I see some other things. I just want to understand. Help me understand, because I can go to the left.
No, you're understanding 100%. You know, we talk about this. Apprenticeship is the... This is a saying amongst all the apprenticeship professionals across the country. Apprenticeship is the best kept secret, right? Well, we've realized that it's actually the worst best kept secret.
Right.
Because what happens is there's this tool. To your point, there's a tool that can create opportunity to the middle class and beyond. And we're not exposing everyone in our communities to it. For far too long, the access points were only seen by certain populations of individuals, or if your dad did it, or if your granddad did it, or if your mom happened to do it. So you didn't know that these opportunities exist. Furthermore, I'm going to take it a little bit deeper. Many times parents don't want their children going into apprenticeship. They drive their kids to want to go to college. And what they don't understand is that apprenticeship is college. The related instruction that you're doing is typically delivered by a technical college system or a technical college system facilitated professor or whatever, you know, or it's at a private training center with national, with folks who have national accreditation.
Right.
So this isn't something where you're going and you're not getting an education.
Right.
And that's a lot of times what parents miss out on, and that's why it's not exposed more so than what we think it should be. You know, I always think back to a time here in Germantown, when Mr. Holmes was here, was the superintendent, and I had a conversation with Mr. Holmes, and they set up a field trip, right? They set up a field trip for the freshman and sophomore on the day of ACT, and they set up the field trip. They were going to go visit a bunch of the manufacturers around the school, which, by the way, for Wisconsin Apprenticeship, some of the very strong Wisconsin Apprenticeship sponsors in very long-term apprentices, apprenticeship programs. They set up the field trip, and on the day of the field trip, over half of the parents called their kids off and said, my kid's not going into manufacturing. They're going to college. They're not doing this, or they're sick or whatever, right? So when we think about it, it's not just employers aren't trying to find our communities. It's our communities aren't trying to find these opportunities.
So there's sort of a stigma on it.
There's a gigantic stigma on it. Let me tell you something. Like I told Mr. Holmes at the time, Mr. Holmes, I've never been to college. Obviously, you all know I served 10 years in prison. I live right on Oak Lane. Mr. Holmes, if you want to tell any of them parents, come drive by and see where I live so they understand that I live in their community and that I've never been to college and that I went through an apprenticeship program, please send them out towards my house so they can see that their child has an opportunity. And it's not that because you're taking this alternative route. That's what we hear a lot, right? Apprenticeship is an alternative route. And if y'all could see me on here, I did the air quotes. But it's okay. it's not alternative.
Right.
It's another route that you can take, another pathway that a student can take after they graduate high school.
So what would it take for us to honestly realize that these are, because now college educated, I'm fine mm-hmm. with that. But I went through some bumps in the road. But my children decided not to. Mm-hmm. And I did not make that a problem. However, there's always been this one thing, and I'm not sure. It's one thing that my grandmother said. Only thing I expect from you is your best. Mm-hmm. If you feel like you need to go to college, go to college. If you feel like you want to go to the military, go. I actually did go to the military. Okay, go to the military. I did that too. But if you just want to work at the grocery store and that's the best thing that you can do, all I ask you to do is to work hard. So with apprenticeship and opportunities, I don't know if I like the fact that we put a stigma on any type of opportunities, because I have noticed, and I see a lot of children go to school because or college because that's what their parents want them to do, mm-hmm. and they fail. Mm-hmm. When are we going to listen or let the opportunities come? Because at this moment, if my son walks in and say, okay, mama, I'm not going to go to college. Now, I don't know. I might have a fit, all the money I spend in football. But I would listen to him, and I would say, these are the opportunities. What do you want to do? Now, if you want to try it, but you want to go something else, I will still come from the one thing is you're not going to do is you're not going to stay at home.
Right.
Now, that's the absolute. But you have these programs for the disenfranchised. Mm-hmm. You have these programs for those who can move from one class to another class. You already said that this is not an internship. This is not a hope. This is not a dream.
Correct.
This is an actual job.
Correct.
Which you can see progression.
Correct.
And you
Correct.
Can see where your end goal will be. Yeah.
Correct.
And that kind of brings me back also. I just want to go back a little bit to our last episode, because we talked about, you know, people incarcerated and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Coming out of prison sometimes don't have a lot of outlets where they can get some help. And so when you started to explain about this apprenticeship and stuff like that, I kind of actually thought that this was for college kids or people that already, you know, graduated, have a bachelor degree or something. I think it's more open.
For anybody, huh?
For anybody.
Yes. Yes.
And maybe like there's also like a maybe misunderstanding. I don't know if it's a misunderstanding or misinformation that people that didn't make it that far don't know about it. So what is it like you guys do to kind of get that information out there?
So a couple things. So within the DEIA Center, and this is the work that we're starting, right? Remember, I'm a month in, you know, the work that we're doing. Mm-hmm. Really, the key is to get the word out, to create the resources and tools, to create opportunities for technical assistance for those employers. Right. And then also on the supply side, creating technical assistance opportunities for organizations that serve people. Because people have to understand what apprenticeship is, mm-hmm. right? Just like each one of you, like you say, you're like, oh, I thought this was for individuals that had college, you know, sure. that already been through college. Mm-hmm. Where at the base bottom line of it, most apprenticeship programs, most employers, all they require is a GED, HSED, or high school diploma.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's what they require, right? Mm-hmm. And it's opportunity to gain college credit, gain your associate's degree, a tech diploma, work towards a bachelor's degree. It depends on the pathway. Some of the apprenticeship occupations, they have licensing tied right. to them. Medical assistant has licensing. Mm-hmm. Barber cosmetology has licensing tied to it. You know, so it really just depends on what the occupation is and what it looks like.
Right.
And when we really think about it, you know, just to kind of both points,
right.
it is, I hate to say this, but it really, a lot of responsibility falls on the parents. You have to, you know, when you talk about your child having an opportunity, many times people don't see the opportunities that exist outside of what they understand or what they know. That's also a part where I hope to play, our center hopes to play, which is you may not know about apprenticeship in your community because you've never been exposed to it, mm-hmm. but it's our responsibility to make sure you're exposed to it in a community to even know that it exists.
And see, that's what a good thing, because as you talk, there's eight people I'm going to talk to you about when I leave. I promise you, I'm serious. And this is what I'm saying when it comes to the community.
Mm-hmm.
There have been eight individuals that I know of.
Mm-hmm.
And they fit this description, because it says between 70 million and 100 million or one in three Americans have some type of criminal record.
Yep. Yep.
Even having a minor criminal record, such as a misdemeanor, mm-hmm. or even without arrest or conviction, can create a problem in the job market. Right. So if I find this knowledge out now and at least 8 individuals have popped into my head, that means there's going to be 8 phone calls that I make saying, "Is what are you planning to do with your life? I have an opportunity. There's somebody I want you to meet." Now, if me, if you, if there's 5 people that pop in your head.
Right.
If there's the fact that I think I should call somebody because this should be on Positively Milwaukee. If this should be a broadcast, is this why can't we use the resources, the employers, the people listening to this podcast at this moment?
Exactly.
Each one of us, and that could take the each one reach one, each one teach one, right. Whatever we're doing, it takes a village to raise a child. Then we're not always just talking about it. That's where I mean, I want to be about what I say I am.
Right.
So as we talk about this, we look at National Apprenticeship. We know exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. What are we going to do? What do you need? How can we get involved? And how can we support this cause?
Yeah,
great question. Just, you know, I'm going to address 2 things you said. You talked about justice-involved individuals, right? So one of the things here, when I was the state director of Wisconsin, we created a position within Department of Corrections, an apprenticeship navigator. And that apprenticeship navigator is housed, his office, his name is Milton Rogers. His office is in Department of Corrections, and he's for the whole state. Mm-hmm. And what happens is, before men or women are being released, if they want to find out about information about apprenticeship, they contact Milton. Milton gets them contacted once they're released to their area, to the apprenticeship navigator in the area that they're being released to, and they start that process. Milton also works with them getting into registered apprenticeship programs within Department of Corrections, because we have programs in there.
Okay.
And then also pre-apprenticeship programs that prepare you for apprenticeship. We have those within Department of Corrections here in Wisconsin as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, you know, some forward thinking about what that looks like. About 5 years ago, myself and one of my staff took a trip down to Ohio, and we saw that they had a couple thousand registered apprentices inside the prison system. So they were registered in the prison system doing apprenticeship work so that when they got out, they had a skill and they had knowledge. Not more importantly, they had a job when they got out, because
right.
most times when they left, they stayed employed at that place that they were doing their apprenticeship or completed their apprenticeship. So it takes them being intentional, right? Being serious and being right. intentional about this mm-hmm. work is key. Many people are not. Many people just do it to check a box. Myself and I as JFF is very serious and intentional about this work, because we see the opportunities.
Yeah.
We see the fact that when you talk to employers who are saying, "Where do we find people at?" And it's like, "Well, have you checked? Have you gotten a partnership with your Department of Corrections?" Well, no, because I don't want folks like that coming to work for me. Folks like what? Right? What does that mean? Right? You already got them working for you.
Yeah.
You may have folks working, folks like that working for you already that have criminal backgrounds that you may not know of. Right? And it's changing the narrative and having those conversations to make employers feel more comfortable, and then getting them to buy in. Right? One of the things Milton actually worked as in Wisconsin apprenticeship as an apprenticeship training representative. So he had a connection to employers. So now he, from the connection to employers, now he went over and worked on the DLC side, and now connection to people, he's able to see that full circle and how we can start to help people when they're released or prior to their release to make sure that they are engaged and they have the ability to get family sustaining wage. And that's what apprenticeship does.
Right.
Like, that's what apprenticeship, at the base bottom line, it gives you the skills, knowledge, and ability to move up and to be proficient in your occupation.
Is there an age limit?
No, so...
So I can do it?
You can.
Okay.
You can. In fact, prior to I left, I had some numbers pulled. And this is not, I'm definitely not saying that you're over 50. I'm just saying.
Oh, but
50.
I'm over 50 and fabulous, and okay, I don't have no problem telling nobody what it is.
No, you know, because I wanted to give you just a concept of, I had a number pulled for people over 50, right?
Right.
So I wanted to see that it was a question that was asked to me about, they asked the same way, like, is there an age limit? And I was very surprised at the large percentage in the state of Wisconsin, I won't say large, but the percentage of individuals in Wisconsin over the age of 50 who started apprenticeships.
Wow. Man.
Yeah. So when we think about it, this isn't just for kids. The average age of an apprentice in the state of Wisconsin was 28 years old.
So, okay, my number just went to 15.
Yeah. So
individuals.
So what you think about is, most time a kid graduates high school, let's give them 4 years of college, right?
Right.
So that puts them at what, 22?
Right.
They get a degree, they get an internship. They work somewhere, they get a degree, they get their internship, then they finish their degree, they start working there a little bit,
right.
They find out that what they want to do at 18 ain't what they want to do at 26.
Okay.
So they start floundering a little bit more in the workforce. Then they get attached to apprenticeship, an occupation within apprenticeship.
Right.
That is typically the path of what happens. Yeah. So, you know, nationwide, we're trying to lower that number into a registered apprenticeship. Because then you start to eliminate things like student debt, right? Why are you going to college if that's not what you want to do,
right?
I always told people, and I tell my kids this, get into the workforce, find out what you like to do, then go to college and get a degree in that. Right. That's the smartest way to do it. Instead of getting a degree in something that you like to do at 18, like I know 30-year-olds who still don't know what they want to do, right? And at 18, you have no clue what you want to do but get out your house,
right?
I want to be out of my parents' house. So, you know, take that opportunity and then engage with the workforce. And now you finish an apprenticeship in 4 or 5 years, no debt. You're making $60,000, $70,000 a year in your early 20s. And then you decide, I want to go to college or I want to get my associate or bachelor's or master's. I want to get that in this field. And now you have all that relatable and transferable knowledge into the field.
Wow, that's amazing.
So it's thinking about, and that's how we have to think about it, right? And that's how a lot of the work I plan to do and I have done it throughout my career is to make parents understand that pathway and what that looks like, right? Apprenticeship is no longer you become an apprentice. I use myself, for example. I was a laborer. I was a construction craft laborer, right? I built highways for almost 6 years. I don't ever plan on building another highway again in my life, right? I'm an apprentice. I'm a proud journey worker.
Right.
I went through the apprenticeship program in Wisconsin. I carry my card. You know, I will talk about the great things of apprenticeship.
Right.
But it was a part of my career pathway. And if a parent can understand that,
right,
no matter what, and see that me barely graduating high school, going to prison for 10 years, getting out at 27, 28, becoming an apprentice. I was that statistic.
You're right.
I was like 28 when I became an apprentice.
Wow.
And then leaving construction and going into government. If a parent could understand that apprenticeship played that role, more importantly, apprenticeship played a role that I'm in now in a national spotlight.
Right.
Without having that apprenticeship, I would never have been engaged into Wisconsin apprenticeship, which then would never give me the ability to be working for JFF.
Yeah.
So there's such opportunity there. We just have to get people to see it. Not only parents, but we have to get our community to see it. We have to get them to understand. And if we can get them to understand, then we put a lot of pressure on employers.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because employers have been, let's just keep it real, right? Employers have been safe because they don't have our community knocking on the door.
Right.
They may have advocates of our community knocking on the door and saying, why aren't you putting our community in your apprenticeship programs? But they're safe because the advocates leave. No one else comes behind the advocates and say, hey, I'm here to get an opportunity in apprenticeship.
Exactly.
That advocate doesn't want an apprenticeship. That advocate is trying to advocate for our community, but there's no people behind the advocate
to
come in and say, so when the advocate comes and he or she says, well, we got 15 people that we know that would qualify to work for you in your apprenticeship, the advocates aren't saying that. They're coming and saying, well, we need to give opportunity. You need to give people from underserved communities an opportunity. Well, we're not putting pressure on the employers. So we got to put that pressure on the employers. And at the same time, give the employers what we're telling them we want them to do and want them to take, right? If we're saying we want you to get tapped into underserved communities, then that's what we need to do. We need to bring those underserved communities to the table to have those conversations.
How can our listeners learn more and find more information about this organization and support?
And you got a big week.
I do. Very big week. We had an event today, a great event with an organization called Urban Institute, where we basically kicked off National Apprenticeship Week. We have a very big event on Friday. We'll have the U.S. Department of Labor Secretary, Marty Walsh. She's going to be a part of the event. We're going to have an employer roundtable, and we'll be talking about launching our DEIA pledge. So that'll be moving forward. I will be working with employers to get them to sign this pledge to make commitments to create more inclusive registered apprenticeships. And for those who are already doing it, they'll be signing a commitment to help us get more employers involved. So it's a really big week, probably 6 events. Actually, I'm in Wausau tomorrow morning, so I'll be leaving at 4:30 in the morning to head up there for a 7 o'clock breakfast event to talk to employers. And then actually tomorrow there are 4 events that I'm on tomorrow. So it's very exciting. I mean, it's just we're getting the word out. And, you know, a couple things. If you want to talk about getting in touch, I could speak just for Wisconsin, wisconsinapprenticeship.org, for those in the Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. For those who may be listening to this outside of Wisconsin, your state has an apprenticeship office. So look, whether it's in Department of Commerce, Department of Workforce, one of those areas, look for apprenticeship mm-hmm. in those areas. For us, you know, for any employers who are listening, anyone who knows an employer that may be engaged and want to get involved with the DEIA efforts that we're doing at JFF, mm-hmm. They can reach out to me. My email is the letter J, Johnson, J-O-H-N-S-O-N, at JFF.org. They can reach out to me with any employer questions. Or if you're a person, if you're on this line or if you're on this podcast and you're here and it's something that tweaked your interest and you really want to get engaged with apprenticeship, you go to wisconsinapprenticeship.org and you find the Apprenticeship Navigator. Right. There's multiple ones. I believe the one for this area, her name is Jessie Gitter. Mm-hmm. Her contact information is up there. And she will ask questions. She will ask some probing questions and get you pointed in the right direction. So I think it's, you know, when we talk about our community, even though I represent nationally, obviously I live in Germantown, so I want to see, you know, our community continue to grow. I want to see Milwaukee continue to grow. There's great opportunity for that. Within apprenticeship, and I can't stress enough, it's a great pathway to the middle class and above.
Right.
I mean, it truly, truly is. And there's some great companies here in the state of Wisconsin who are involved in registered apprenticeship. There are some even better companies that are involved in DEIA work and apprenticeship. And we just need more companies to get on board and to want to buy in to what we're doing.
All right. Well. That's a lot of information.
That's a lot of information.
That was a lot. But it was a very productive conversation.
Yeah, exactly. Greatly appreciated.
And I really do appreciate the honesty. However, we've only scratched the surface. So we will be back in touch with you. Mr. Johnson will be back on another podcast.
Of course we will.
And another podcast.
I know, right?
And
know,
another right? one. This so is, just stay tuned.
We're looking for an expansion, you know?
Yeah. Definitely. Like
maybe the next time there might be somebody that he knows that can kind of bring more information, because this is what we stand for as GCC. This is what we're working on. And I think this is a great start. And this is just like the tip of the iceberg.
Yep.
And I'm just telling you, this is going to be.
I think, when we were talking, you know, prior to this podcast, you know, we were talking about, you know, what can the listeners do to support more equitable and fair chance employment, right? When we talk about that in apprenticeship and the listeners, you know, it's be active, be proactive. Right. Most of the listeners work somewhere, right? Right. So if they go to work tomorrow and they look around and they see, if they don't see anyone that looks, or if they see everyone that looks just like them, then that's a conversation they can have with their employer and say, what can we do to make a difference? If they go to work tomorrow and they see the high skill positions,
right,
and then the low skill positions, and there's a distinct
difference
between who's in each one,
right,
then they can have that conversation. Right. And that conversation can be driven from an employee to look around and say, what could we do to compete better if we had a much more diverse workforce, right? I won't put the companies on blast, but I'll wrap it up like this, right? When we talk about representation and how important it is for representation, I was watching a commercial the other night, two commercials, actually came back to back. It was like 1 o'clock in the morning, so I was surprised to see commercials on there for employers, right? But that's how employers are hungry right now. They want people.
Right.
The beginning of the commercial, the first commercial, They showed two white men, said, you can drive trucks here and earn $100,000. The last 15 seconds of the commercial, they showed the floor of the warehouse, the people who were loading it, driving fork trucks, and said, you can make $50,000, right? It was like some number like that, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't 100. Two white men, 100,000, a white woman, black man, black woman, and it may have been a Latino guy. 50,000, right? Mm. Representation matters.
Right. Yeah.
So what if you just told anyone who saw that commercial, if you're white and you're a male, $100,000.
Right.
If you're anybody else, you're going to work inside the warehouse. You might make 50. Half. So we have to think about that, right? We have to think about the representation. So when we drive that, when we talk about what the listeners can do, it's pay attention to that stuff and call their employers out in a really good way and say, how can we compete better? Or how can we attract that top tier talent? Right. What can we do to attract them? Because right. You know what? I saw the next commercial. This is crazy. They were commercials back to back. Next commercial, huge Wisconsin Register apprenticeship sponsor. They've been around for a while. Equity, inclusion all across the board in their commercial.
Oh,
they showed underserved community, individuals from underserved communities doing the exact same high skill work as their majority counterparts. That's the difference.
That's the difference.
You have an employer showing you what they think you're worth, and then you have an employer showing you they want you to be included.
Right.
And that's key. That is key. So when you talk about what the listeners can do, that's what they can do. They can drive this conversation and continue this conversation inside the four walls of their organization tomorrow morning when they go to work and grab a cup of coffee.
All right. Yeah. With that being said, thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you. Thank you, you all Victor. For having me.
Thank you, Kim.
We are here. Yeah. We will be back. Yeah. We have our outgoing announcements. Make sure you tune in, learn how to be a member, support the GCC. And until next time, listen, you got to think. Don't talk about it. We got to be about it. Peace.